Good morning and welcome into the show. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday, November the 15th. It is 8 a.m. on the East Coast. This is your 5 a.m. super early morning wake-up call. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday morning. Coming up after the break, pleased to be joined by Kenneth Tebow, founder of Motorik FC there in the DMV. And I look forward to catching up with him to talk to him about his club and lessons he's learned, etc. Before I get back into something that we ended the show with yesterday, there was some news that that broke after the show, which is that Landon Donovan has been named the head coach of the newly formed San Diego USL team, the San Diego Loyal. Still not really sure what that name means, but he is part of, I believe, the ownership group there, and is has been named the head coach for its inaugural season, playing in the USL Championship. So, other news in the USL West concerning head coaches, our friend and friend of the show, Eric Winalda, it was announced that he will be back again next season, setting up a head coaching head-to-head between Landon Donovan and Eric Winalda, two U.S. men's national team legends, and we shall see them going head-to-head on the coaching side of things as well. So big news there on both of them and both of their clubs, San Diego and Las Vegas Lights. Now, to get into something that we talked about yesterday, at the end of the episode, we were talking through kind of where we're at in the state of American soccer with our club setup, our club structure, our systems, looking at some of the things that when I was in Amsterdam last week, some of the things that I observed in terms of proximity of clubs to each other, even in the same park, there were multiple clubs competing head to head, and you know, throughout the city of Amsterdam, there's a lot of clubs, and you see this across the country, just thousands of clubs within this tiny little country in Europe, the Netherlands. And looking at where we're falling short here in the U.S. And we finished the show talking about where we could go, where we should go, in my view, and shared a little bit of the conversation that Chris Kessel and I have had off air about what would work and what kind of concept would work. And we've been talking about this on and off for quite a while. We have talked about, you know, regionalization. We've talked about, you know, access and making sure that people can get to each other, you know, rather easy, and limiting some of the cost. Also playing off this idea of college football and what has worked so well with kind of the conference structure set up within college sports, how that has lended itself to stadium attendance and people driving into these matches, etc. And I want to throw up just a little bit of a rough little graphic here of kind of a picture of what we were kind of talking about at the end of the show yesterday. Had a lot of questions on social media afterwards, listening to that clip, like, can you explain a little bit more about what this would look like? What would it mean? And so I just wanted to kind of start off the show talking for just a minute about this idea on a, you know, big macro level, and why this, I believe, is the answer and why it would work really well. So the first aspect here is that we have a current infrastructure and system in American soccer that isn't working. Major League Soccer is not reaching all of America, and neither is the USL or NISA. All of these clubs and leagues and teams are doing what they can, but they are not going to be able to reach the markets across this country, the cities and communities and towns across this market, with just a few dozen clubs. It's not going to work. So what we have to do is unleash the potential of the American soccer ecosystem. And instead of looking at a few thousand clubs, roughly right now, America has about 9,000 clubs across the country. To put this in perspective, we could easily have somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 clubs or more. So we are maybe a third of where we could be just in the number of clubs in this country. So we're nowhere close to tapping into our potential in terms of the quantity of clubs. But when we look at why that is, it's because everything is disconnected. Our system is not connected vertically. It's not connected horizontally. You have everyone kind of running their own fiefdom, their own idea, their own prerogative, and no one is really working together. This is the ultimate job of the U.S. Soccer Federation, and they have not been doing it, and it is hurting everyone. And so one of the things that, you know, naysayers or critics or skeptics will say, Major League Soccer owner operators have invested under one set of rules, and it's unfair to change it on them now. Well, what if there was a way to make it better for them? They still would not be at a massive risk for relegation, but we could make it a lot more sustainable for them, a lot more successful financially for them, and unlock potential that they can't get to right now. And that is really one of the benefits of this setup right here, with having kind of a Super League of America. And this is not meant to necessarily be the title, although, you know, it could be named whatever. It's more about the concept that you would have this Champions League, UEFA style Champions League, as our first division. Every year, the 16 teams that would compete in this Super League of America would come from the four kind of super conferences in the country. So every year you're trying to have a top four finish in, you know, the Super Conference in the East, Super Conference in the South, in the Midwest, in the West. And those are generally following these region 1, 2, 3, and 4 setups that U.S. soccer has already established. So you follow those general boundaries and you take the top four finishers. So, you know, if you were to look at, say, the East, that super conference or power conference set up there. Say you had the New York Cosmos, you had DC United, you had NYCFC, and, you know, let's say the Philadelphia Union are the top four finishers in the Eastern Super Conference. And in that setup, those four finishers would then qualify for the next season's Super League of America. And they would be competing in this kind of first division, UEFA style, Champions League style competition on top of playing in their super conference, the Conference East, right? So they're having to try to qualify again for the top four to stay competing in that Super League, and they are competing every year in that Super Conference East. Now, the benefits to this kind of system is you are rewarding on-field success. You are unlocking a brand new setup that is going to bring in, instead of, you know, a couple dozen markets in what would really be kind of that mainline area of revenue that Major League Soccer is at now, you're talking about 72 to 80 clubs across the country that would be playing in that what would be de facto second division, but would really be treated as our true first division. So our in the pyramid, our first division would be this annual, you know, Champions League style Super League competition. The actual, you know, table style league schedule setups would start at that super conference level of the four conferences that's already been established by U.S. Soccer in the East, Midwest, South, and West. So by doing that, we've now brought in, instead of, you know, 20 to 30 teams, now we're looking at 72 to 80 teams. And that is going to help us tremendously. Why do we need to do this? Well, for one, we need to do this because our country is a continent-sized country. And we should, instead of allowing that obstacle to paralyze us from getting this done and getting it done well, we should embrace it. And learn from what has worked. And what has worked in America at the college level is the conference setups. And you see it play out, and it's actually worked better. I would make the argument that the college conference setup has worked better than the national professional setup. And here's where why I say that. When you look at attendance figures, college football in the South, for example, will outdraw the NFL. They'll have over 100,000 in stadiums to watch college football. The NFL is not hitting those numbers. So people will drive 2 to 3 hours to get to a game, 5-6 hours to get to a game, 8-9 hours to get to a game. But if New Orleans Saints in the NFL is playing in the NFL and they're going to be playing against the New York Jets, there's not a ton of Saints fans making that game. But if the Saints were in a setup where they're playing the Falcons, but they're also playing Charlotte, they're playing Miami, they're playing Birmingham, they're playing Memphis, you're going to see Saints fans travel more. And their numbers, their attendance numbers, would actually increase because you would see more people get interested in those local cities, but also in their regions. So some of these bigger teams, these bigger professional soccer teams, would be able to, you know, build off of the same kind of success that Atlanta United has had in the South. Imagine a team in New Orleans, a team in Birmingham, a team in Nashville, Chattanooga. You look at the opportunities of Charlotte and Raleigh, Memphis. You go on and on, down into Florida, Miami, Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa Bay. All of these cities are fielding proper, what would be classified anywhere else in the world as a first division level club and first team. And so that is what this super conference setup would do, is it would provide that kind of setup and environment. The benefit to that is tremendous. We could radically increase our commercial dollars. We could radically increase the buy-in and commitment and loyalty of our fans because they would be able to travel. So your table style leagues that would begin at Division II, which would basically be our de facto Division I, would have these clubs playing regularly in this kind of regionalized super conference, power conference style setup of a table style season. Now, for those who are going, well, you know, that totally means that New York's never going to play LA and Atlanta's never going to play Seattle and Chicago's never going to play Houston. Well, this is where cup tournaments become even more valuable. Right now, if I'm Major League Soccer and I'm already flying all over the country and then I play a cup game where I have to fly again, it's kind of lost its luster. So how can we turn the obstacle into a positive, into a good thing? By having our cup competitions cross over from super conference to super conference. So you could have, you know, after a certain level, these teams begin to get drawn into cross conference matchups. So in Atlanta United might be facing off against a New York Cosmos, and an Indy 11 may be facing off against an FC Dallas in a cup competition match. That's something that would draw more interest. All of these things make much more logistical sense when you're looking at the potential of revenue that would far outweigh our costs of travel for those one or two, three games throughout the season, where you would have this kind of cup style of you know, tournament or event, and then our table finishes, our leagues would keep people in their general geographic boundary. So you know, there's more that I'd like to get into with this, and maybe later in the show, after we've had some time to talk to Kenneth, we'll be able to do that. But just looking at the top level of this thing, it really makes a lot of sense. It minimizes the you know, the exposure to any investor who has already placed a lot of money into their teams, and yet at the same time provides a big opportunity and kind of a nugget or a carrot of incentive to invest even more, to build their clubs and build their teams into real bona fide power clubs, super clubs that can really, really compete on an international level. This is the kind of system that would do that, and it would drive growth and give us the kind of revenue that we could attain from television revenue, etc., that could begin to fund the pyramid: solidarity payments, training compensation, promotion purses, etc., as well as relegation parachute payments. All of those things would be able to come through a system and structure like this, and would, for the first time in American soccer, give us some structure to help us in a healthy way grow the game at all levels and in all areas. So the focus would be on sporting merit, doing what you do well in the field and doing it well, but yet at the same time getting rewarded for it and not necessarily having to go bankrupt over it. So it's, to me, it's a really, really you know, logical way to overcome the obstacle in our path. And later in the show, we'll get into some of the questions that's been asked on social media since we talked about this yesterday, and get into more some of the pyramid. But before we do, our sponsor this half hour is Duktig Brand, DuktigBrand.com. If you have not ordered your winter gear, your new notebook, the standard size notebook, you should check them out at DuktigBrand.com, DuktigBrand.com. Use promo code DWSHOW and you will get 10% off of your order at DuktigBrand.com. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back into the show. Thanks for tuning in today, this Friday morning. We are delighted to be joined by Kenneth Thibeau. Ken, how are you? Kenneth, how are you this morning? Welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Doing good. It's an honor to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We wanted to have you on and kind of talk a little bit about your club, the origin of the club, why you decided to create Motorik in this whole idea. So give us a little bit of background. What is the origin story for your club name? Where does all that inspiration come from?
Sure. I mean, basically, you know, I call it football, so I'll just stick with football for my speech. Football has been a part of my life for my entire life. Growing up in the suburbs of D.C., it's a very cosmopolitan area. You got a lot of families from the World Bank, from the embassies. You got a lot of immigrant families here. So football is pretty big in this area. And so I basically played as a youth. Then, you know, when MLS came about, I became a DC United fan. Spent a couple years at RFK Stadium supporting United. But then also started to get deeper into the lower division scene. Started following a lot of lower division clubs in this area, like Real Maryland. They were a club in the PDL. I think they might have played in the USL as well. We had the Northern Virginia Royals, just clubs like that. And I really liked the atmosphere of the lower division matches. And that just got me to follow it deeper and deeper on a more national level, following the MPSL, seeing the rise of clubs like Chattanooga, Detroit, and just seeing all these exciting developments going on in other communities that you normally wouldn't have associated as being kind of football friendly, but not really seeing anything that exciting going on in this area. You have a big youth club scene, but on the elite amateur level, there wasn't anything really ambitious going on. So one day I just decided, instead of sitting on my hands and waiting for somebody to present something for me to get excited about, I should maybe just go ahead and try to do it on my own. And that's basically when the idea for Motorik started to germinate.
In looking at the, you know, what you're classifying as elite amateur soccer, what inspired you to kind of head in that direction, elite amateur? Was it the fact that there just wasn't a club in your area, or you know, that was what you would classify as elite amateur? Or was that kind of, you know, a space that you were more passionate about, you know, in terms of that level of soccer? What kind of, you know, guided you in the direction of, you know, forming Motorik, but forming it as an elite amateur club?
Well, I mean, yeah, here in Fairfax County, you didn't really have any prominent clubs. In Alexandria City, you have like the Alexandria Soccer Association, who have their Alexandria Reds. They're pretty prominent. And then in Loudoun County next door, you had the Evergreen, the Virginia Hammers. But there wasn't anything here. And I wanted a club that I could support as locally as possible, and something that could serve the people of Fairfax County. But obviously, I think the most, the most obvious impetus for joining Elite Amateur was the financial aspect of it, and just the fact that it was the most realistic for whatever resources I was going to invest in a club. So just knowing that the costs were minimal, the travel was minimal, those were very enticing aspects of this level.
Looking at, you know, forming a club from the ground up, everyone, I'm sure, you follow in this as well, has a dream, an ultimate, you know, dream that if if you could wave a magic wand, you could work really hard, you can make things come together, you know, finances, everything, you know, could be exactly as you would want and hope. And when you're looking at that dream, for you, when you look at Motorik, that dream of a club, what would you like Motorik to be able to eventually grow into? Is it to remain at this elite amateur level, or would your ultimate dream be able to build it big into a, you know, a professional level enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, after you've been kind of in the trenches for long enough, you kind of don't dream as much. You know, when you first go into it, you're pretty naive and you're pretty ignorant about the reality. So you have these pie in the sky ambitions. And then after a while, you're just happy if you can get your guys out to training. That's like the perfect club for you. But yeah, I mean, I don't really dream like too far ahead, because there's always the struggle just to be sustainable at the level that you're at. So you kind of have to temper yourself in terms of having a grander vision. And for me, I mean, right now, my biggest priority is just building a team that can win at the level that we're at. And I feel like if the club does grow, it should sort of grow organically as the squad grows, like as the squad becomes stronger. Because I also like the idea of moving forward with the guys that we have, because the guys have been very loyal and very committed. And I want kind of the club to facilitate opportunities for them, whether that's, you know, latching on to other clubs or growing with us. So I feel like our success on the pitch is really what would warrant me trying to take us to another level. I mean, I know we don't have like a genuine pro rel system in this country where sporting merit dictates where you go, how far you can go, or whether you're going to just be stagnant. But yeah, I'd like to see ours, because right now it would just seem kind of like a joke. I mean, in our area, we have, you know, I posted about this earlier on Twitter, but in this area, we have massive juggernauts like Christos FC. We have successful clubs like Yinz United. They've become very established. I mean, Christos, they've worked over decades to get where they are now and to be as dominant as they are now. And I just feel like there's just something cheap about it. If we could just spend money just to sort of join a national league, and, you know, no matter where the quality of our squad's at, because we're at this level now, or we're national, we're somehow greater than those clubs or more relevant than those clubs. You know, I mean, there's been an ongoing debate whether national really is that much better than regional. And I know for a fact, having faced some of these regional juggernauts, the quality is just as good, if not superior.
In terms of players, where do you go to get your players? Are they from the Northern Virginia area? Are they all over D.C.? How do you find them, scout them? Is it networking? How are you finding these players? What are their ages? What are their backgrounds? Are they college guys? You know, give us a little bit of insight into kind of the Motorik squad.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of had to wing it with a different approach, because I think a lot of clubs, basically they're founded by coaches who've already been attached to some sort of youth academy system. They know players, they have players that they can already set as their roster when they create their club. But when Motorik was created, it was mostly created as a concept, as an idea. I didn't even have any player. I mean, it was funny because early on, the Washington Premier League, they were heavy on recruiting us, and I spoke with their president, and he asked me how many players I had, and I basically had to tell him zero. So we had to start from scratch. I got lucky. There was one player that joined us, Freddie Rodriguez. He's still with us today. He helped a lot with recruiting. We just kind of tried to spread the word through social media about our tryouts. And basically, so you get your first wave of players. You know, the quality might not be there, but at least you've filled out your roster. And then those players send out word of mouth to their communities. We basically, a lot of our players are from Woodbridge, which is south of Fairfax County and Prince William County. We get a lot of players from that area just through word of mouth. And over time, though, you know, some guys we've realized just don't have what it takes to succeed at this level. So we have tryouts. We cut some guys. We always add some. But it's kind of hard because this area, it's kind of cluttered in terms of clubs. So there's a lot of competition for recruitment. And like last fall when we started our first Maryland Majors fall season, we felt we were pretty strong with the roster we had. But then some UPSL club popped up right before our season, and basically we lost like half our starting lineup to them. So it's always a struggle, because for me, the way to really build a successful club is to have a consistent roster season after season that can build chemistry, can build an understanding. You have good camaraderie, good morale. So if you have to keep, you know, basically restocking from scratch, it doesn't help. But I feel like now we've developed a lot of loyalty amongst our guys. I mean, we treat our guys with the highest respect. We encourage them to be leaders within the squad. It's kind of, our club is run more as a collaboration than having a hierarchy. So I feel confident that we'll be able to retain our guys over the seasons and then also add strength. For us, the biggest thing we have to do is also, starting out our roster, we kind of gathered a lot of very young players. But a league like the Maryland Majors, it's not a developmental league. These are veteran players. Most of the rosters, the ages of their players are like 25 to 30, whereas our roster was comprised of like 19, 20-year-olds. So they've had to like really get up to speed to handle the level of quality talent that's at our league. So my objective is, I mean, to keep the guys that we have that I've seen progress and have felt comfortable sharing the pitch with these older guys. But over time, I think I do have to start getting an older roster and more experienced roster to succeed, especially if we moved up to the first division where clubs like Christos are waiting.
When you are looking at, you know, this entire project in creating a club, what has been your approach to creating a supporter culture or building a fan base or followers? So what has been your approach to that? What has been your experience so far? Lessons learned, etc.
We've been more successful kind of getting a virtual support. We've gotten a lot of acknowledgement around the region, around the country, but locally, you know, just getting people out on Sundays to watch elite amateur football, that's been a lot more difficult. I mean, I kind of knew it would be a challenge going in because all the Washington Premier League matches I've seen in the area, you know, I never saw supporters there. Maybe if there were like three people, that would be great. So I still haven't really figured out that magic formula, but also at the same time, because, you know, like our performance last year was very subpar and we were still kind of feeling our way, dealing with the county in terms of securing facilities. We sort of jumped around from pitch to pitch. So I didn't feel like we had a good foundation for me to sort of promote the club to garner support. I didn't necessarily want people to come out and see a product that wasn't, you know, ideal yet. So I didn't really put too much effort in that area last year, but now that we're a little more stable and now like this season, we've been using West Potomac High School in Alexandria, which is cool because it's in Alexandria. So it gives us, you know, the local identity that goes along with our name. And also it's like around 3,000 seater. So that kind of inspires me to do a lot more outreach and such, but it's also difficult because it's something where you'd want your squad to get involved, to go out to events and things like that. But we, you know, we have a lot of guys who are basically just working class guys and have a lot of responsibility with work or school. So it's sort of difficult to put those additional promotional responsibilities on them because they're already sacrificing so much just to play, just to come out to training and, you know, give their efforts on Sunday. But now that we have a more, plus also, you know, since it was something new for me that I was sort of feeling my way through and I wasn't confident if it was something that I was really meant to do or that I really wanted to carry on for an extended period. But now I definitely know that it is my calling. So I think this coming year we'll put more effort and investment in marketing the team and building a local community. I mean, for the most part, we're very active on social media. But for me, the bigger sort of profit that we've taken from social media is connecting with other clubs, connecting with other general managers, getting some pretty high profile friendlies. Like we've played up against a couple NPSL clubs that we probably wouldn't get those opportunities if we didn't work it on social media. So right now it's been more just sort of getting oriented to the community of clubs and leagues, than sort of getting supporters.
In terms of creating a club that is sustainable from a financial standpoint, operating at an elite amateur level in the area that you're operating with the schedule and you know, geographic travel schedule and itinerary as well, what has that process been like for you? Because I know when you talk about starting a club and getting a club off the ground, everyone's trying to sort out, okay, how are we going to pay for this? So how have you managed to figure out a pathway to sustainability?
Well, first of all, before you start thinking about revenues, you have to basically learn how to spend smart. I'd say last year, I was very delusionally spendthrifty. We played a friendly against Atlantic City FC in Atlantic City, and I put our whole squad up at the Tropicana for a night to sort of augment the experience. When we came out the gate, I produced three different scarves for the club. I thought maybe we could charge for our matches and bring in revenue that way. But so instead of the nonprofit rental fee, which basically would be $50 a match, we were spending $300 a match. So I learned a lot of lessons in that sense and how to keep costs to a minimum. Now basically it's just, you know, league fees, facility fees, ref fees, and that's pretty much all we spend our money on. Spending smart is probably the first key before you even start thinking about revenues and such. But in terms of revenues, we've put a lot of effort into our merchandise. There's a lot of competition at this level in terms of hawking your jerseys and such. So we've kind of focused on putting some quality there. The scarves, the t-shirts, we always just try to push our merch. But then also, I don't think that's ever going to get you to the level you need to be to really be sustainable. So it's really up to finding sponsors to help keep you afloat. And then, I mean, at this level, you're going to have to take out of your pocket. That's always inevitable as well. So most of the financing in this first, 2 years now would be basically just straight out of my pocket.
When, you know, looking at playing in a Maryland Majors type setup, what is the schedule? Is it a fall to spring? Is it a summer season only? Like what is the setup for the Maryland Majors, and what or how did that factor rather into your decision to play with Maryland Majors?
I like it. They have the fall, spring with seasons, which are split up. Every fall you have your champions and your promotion relegation, and then every spring. And basically I like that. I like that they had promotion relegation. It sort of made the competition seem more exciting to me because there was more at stake. Also, I just, knowing the prestige and the challenge of facing a club like Christos, that was a big inspiration for me to join the Maryland Majors. Because like I said, it could have been the Maryland Majors or the Washington Premier League. But I just felt like the Maryland Majors, they were very organized in the way they were set up. They did outreach on social media and things like that. So I just felt like that was probably the league for us. Plus, I'm a Marylander expat, so I already have an affinity and affection for Maryland. So that was kind of attractive for me to play in their league.
What is the kind of geographic boundary for Maryland Majors? Is it the Metro DC area, or is it kind of a state league? For the audience that's maybe not familiar with the DMV, give us a little bit of a background on Maryland Majors as a league and kind of the geographic footprint as well.
Well, at our level, because we still play in the second division, fortunately for us, it's split into north and south. So the north, it's more Baltimore, the counties north of Baltimore. And then here in the south, it's I guess the northernly most part of it is Columbia, Maryland, which is just beyond the Beltway. I'd say our longest road trips are like maybe an hour or so. But I think they're going to try to start expanding more in Virginia and around the Beltway. There are a couple clubs now that joined this year around the Beltway, like Limitless FC. We also have a club that's kind of a military club based around Fort Meade, which is up north. It's basically concentrated around the I-95 corridor between Baltimore and D.C.
So is the first division like the entire state, kind of north, south, the whole thing, and then they regionalize at Division II?
Yeah. So basically, if we got promoted, we'd start playing more games in Baltimore and against those clubs up there. So gotcha. our travel would increase. But for the second division, it's split regionally, yeah.
So looking at where you are and what you're trying to build, when you are looking at promotion and winning promotion, going from a setup right now that would have kind of this regional split at Division II to a statewide split, is it a higher cost that would be detrimental being promoted into the first division, or is it something you think you can manage even at that elite amateur level playing in the Maryland Majors?
Yeah, I don't think it would make a difference. I mean, travel-wise, we basically just carpool, so there aren't really any expenses there. We tried when we played, I think it was it against Charlottesville, which is about 2.5 hours out west. We tried for the first time renting a van to do that, and we basically were overcharged like $1,000 or so. So we just decided to go back to our normal routine where we just basically carpool. So I don't think the travel is that much. It won't be more at all. Just whatever personal gas anybody's paying. I think the fees are basically the same, but the payoff for winning it is, I think it's like $2,500 for winning the first division. So there's an increase there, but no, for us, what's the most daunting aspect of going up to the first division is just the immense increase in the quality of the talent that we'd face. I mean, between second and first division, it's like a world apart. We had a club this last season, Columbia FC, which we kind of considered the juggernauts of Division Two. They basically rolled over every club in Division Two. They moved up this season, and I think they maybe won like one game. And I mean, they have an immensely talented squad, but they've been steamrolled in a couple matches as well. So they're coming back down. So the most daunting aspect of the promotion is just, I mean, not only do you have to build the squad that would, you know, dominate your level, you also have to anticipate that if you go up, it's going to be a whole other level. And if you hope to stay there, you really got to increase the talent of your squad. But in terms of costs or organizational concerns, there isn't really any.
When you're looking at the promotion relegation setup in your local area with the Maryland Majors and the experiences, the things you're talking about having to have the pressure to win, having to improve your roster as you move up, that the talent level and the competition level continues to rise, get better, forces you to, you know, to invest or maybe, you know, recruit smarter, etc. How would that aspect that you're experiencing on a regular basis there in your local context, how do you think that would influence and affect and alter American soccer at large if that was the landscape for every club in America, connected together regionally, sub-regionally, locally, but having the opportunity to go up, but yet the pressures as well to perform and really do well on the field as well as off the field? How would that change what we see on a regular basis in American soccer?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm projecting my own experience, I know for me, like, you know, if we had a season where we came in second place in the second division or third, like, you know, we had a good winning season and we almost made it, I wouldn't be able to take any contentment from that. If this were just a static league where you're not going anywhere, you know, second or third, that's cool. We can pat ourselves on the back. Good season. We'll come back next year. We'll go again. But when you've got promotion there, you know, and that's the objective, anything short of that is just a complete disappointment. And you cannot take solace in anything but, you know, 100% success, because now we're just stuck back at the same level that we're at. It puts a lot more pressure on constantly improving. Because yeah, you can't take any satisfaction in anything but being the best. And I think that would affect it in other ways, in other leagues and higher leagues.
If you could give one, and maybe it's more than one, but tip, lesson, etc., to maybe there's a group of guys, a group of ladies in this country, and they're you know, looking at forming a club and they want to start something from scratch, they want to build something in their local context, what would be a piece of advice that you would give to them? Maybe it's something you've learned through experience. Maybe it's something that you wish you would have known before you got started. But what would be something that you would want to convey to them that maybe they could use in their planning and in preparation?
Just basically be realistic. That would be my main thing. Like, be realistic about your expectations, be realistic about where you are at and what your club actually is at every level. Don't get caught up in the bubble that can make you, you know, perceive yourself or even Football America as something bigger than it is, as something more accommodating than it is. Be ready to face like a massive struggle. This is going to consume a lot of your time, a lot of your thoughts. So just be ready to give yourself over to 100% and, expect a lot of struggle, expect a lot of failure, but just learn from it all, fight through it all, stick with it. And, you know, and just try to surround yourself with as many people who have expertise that can help you out in the journey as possible. And just do it. And if you're thinking about doing it, just do it. You know, throw yourself into it and see what happens. And just be ready to spend a lot of money.
great advice there. How can people connect with you and your club, learn more about you, maybe buy some merch, what have you, to know, obviously, to listen to the story today, but also to connect with you afterwards?
Probably the best interface is our Twitter, which is at Motorik FC. That's MOTORIKFC. And we're very receptive. If you reach out to us, we'll respond. And then we have a website, MotorikFC.com, where there's a web store. You can find some of our gear there. It's not really fleshed out as much as we'd like it to be as a website, but there you have it. And yeah, that's about it.
Well, look, Kenneth, thank you for joining us on the show today. We really appreciate your time, sharing your real-world experience. A lot of times people, you know, they see the bright lights and they look at FC Barcelona and they think, man, let me start a club and I can get there in 5 years. But there are realities to building, just like building a business, building this club culture in America as well. And I appreciate you sharing the behind-the-scenes of Motorik, and best of luck as you continue to build your project.
But I want to clarify, though, I don't want to downplay it too much, because no matter what you experience running the club during the week, when you have that euphoria of those 2 hours on match day during competition, it makes it all well worth it.
Yep, I completely agree. That's why we do what we do, man. We love the game, the passion for the game, absolutely. Well, Kenneth, thanks for joining the show. We really appreciate it. We look forward to having you back on again soon.
Great. Have a great day.
Thank you. That is Kenneth Thibault of Motorik FC. We'll be right back after this.
No one, no man, no woman, no child should ever have to drink green water with bugs, with algae, with disease in it. Bad water and a lack of toilets kills more people than all the wars in the world. We know how to bring clean drinking water right now to every single person on earth. And when you can bring water into communities, it truly transforms them. It changes everything. Or you could know that you'd made a difference. You could know that you had truly impacted the life of a family, of a community, of a region. There was either clean water or there wasn't. We believe in a world where every single person has clean and safe water to drink, and we will continue fighting until that happens.
Into the show, I'd like to thank Kenneth for coming on the show and talking about Motorik and his endeavors. It is so encouraging to see and hear from people who are putting their neck on the line, building a dream, trying to build something right in their own city, in their own area. And you go into things and you hope for certain things, but then reality sets in and you learn lessons. But when you're trying to build something great, it's generally not going to happen overnight. And so you can tell in guys like Kenneth who live, breathe the game, that this is a passion project. And best of luck to him as he continues to build out Motorik. If you're in the area, you should check out one of their games, and I'm sure he'd love to meet you. getting back to kind of where we were at the beginning of the show, was picking up kind of where we left off yesterday's show. And we were talking through this idea that I laid out yesterday at the end, talking about how could we overcome the obstacle that is a continent-sized country. And, you know, I explained some things yesterday about, you know, a general concept. We released a little bit of a graphic of the idea later in the day. And today we've been kind of pulling that up on the show and looking at some of the structure of this idea and why it makes sense. And the basic structure is this, that you have kind of this Champions League style, UEFA Champions League style, first division, where your top four finishes from each of these kind of, I would consider them like a super conference, or a power conference if you think of it in college sports. Setups. So if you finish top four in the Super Conference in the West, you qualify for next year's kind of Super League of America, this Champions League style setup. So you continue to play in your Super Conference, but you're also playing in this Champions League style. So if you are an LAFC and you finish top four in your Super Conference out in the West, you will be in a group with, you know, one team from the each of the other three Super Conferences. So all of that would be kind of cross Super Conference setups, each of those original groups. And it would play out over the course of the years, your first division, but at the same time, you are having to still compete in your Super Conference for your regular season kind of table style finish. So it is a way to overcome the unique challenge that is a continent sized country. And I think it also creates a scenario where we can leverage the vast size of this country from a geographical standpoint, but also leverage our population size. We have so much potential here. We don't tap into it at all, and or very, very, very little of it. And so this is a way that we could really turn the lights on in cities and in communities. We really need to get away from this idea of, you know, focusing everything on, you know, artificial scarcity. You have to get three or four or five clubs to merge together just so you can be powerful enough to get into the DA or this or that. All of that needs to go away. We need to just have tables. You finish well, you move up. If you don't finish well, you move down. If you finish in the middle, you stay where you are, and link everything together. Adult, youth, etc. Get rid of the travel, the excessive travel as much as possible. We need to mitigate that and limit that as much as possible, not exacerbate what is an obstacle. So when we look at that, and we look at that from a concept of first teams and professional football and semi-professional and amateur football as well, how can we get more professional teams? How can we get them to be more sustainable? One of the things we need to do is have a system that brings in more revenue, more commercial dollars. If we create more attraction, if we create a bigger audience, if we create more excitement, more passion from the fans in this country, we're going to be able to get access to more sponsors, more TV dollars, etc. And in so doing, that's going to benefit the entire pyramid when it's set up properly. So this idea of having this kind of Champions League style in the first division and then these super conferences in the second division, which are really our de facto kind of first division setups, that's where we got to look to go the next step down, kind of your NISA level, USL League One, you know, Chattanooga's Detroit's that are working their way and about to become, you know, NISA member level type clubs as well in this kind of third division of American soccer, and taking kind of where we're at with this kind of U.S. soccer region 1, 2, 3, and 4, building off of that idea as the boundaries of these super conferences. You then go inside of those super conferences and you carve those up as well. And you build those into some regional leagues. You know, so maybe you have, you know, just for the sake of labeling, you start at this Super League of America, then you have the super conferences, the four super conferences, and then inside of each super conference, maybe you have four super regional leagues, just for the sake of kind of following along with this logic. And each of those four super regional leagues would be operating in a table style league, and they would, you know, finish and enter into a promotion playoff setup that would eventually pit them against a promotion playoff with the super conference teams that are up for possible relegation. In a setup like this, you would have basically four of these super regionals inside of each super conference. And then every level, you know, you go down, you're working your way into a fourth division that would have 32 of these regionalista or regional style leagues. So you would have kind of two making up each of these kind of super regional leagues above them. And once you get to that level, the next step down are your kind of state leagues and kind of city league setups. So in doing this, what we would do is create a structure and a system that would, for the first time in American soccer, give us the ability to connect all of our leagues. We've seen it on the show this week. Our current dysfunctional system pits leagues against each other, turns clubs against each other because maybe they have different goals. Maybe they have different ambitions. Maybe they see themselves in the way they operate or their purpose being different. In a connected system of leagues, there is only one purpose. There's only one path, and that is to win on the field. And your off-the-field operations will aid you greatly in being successful on the field, but it will get all of our clubs addressing all of the areas in order to be quality clubs. And that's ideally what we want. We want a healthy club culture in American soccer, and we don't have it right now. The other thing that this setup does is it goes wide rather than trying to go deep. And here's why that matters. The U.S. has a lot of big cities, a lot of areas that could easily support a really big professional club. We have cities that could support multiple big professional clubs. And I'm not just talking about New York or L.A. I'm talking about cities like Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Dallas, Houston could all support multiple professional clubs, and cities throughout this country would fit that same bill. So we need a system that allows us to regionalize as quick as possible, not just to limit expenses like travel, etc., but also to bring more of these clubs to the table, to get fans more accessible to the game. We need to stop thinking about our leagues as having to be national in the first, second, third, fourth division, and having teams fly from Miami to Seattle to Chicago to New York to LA, and instead get to what really matters in the context of a domestic calendar and domestic schedule. And that is the ability for fans to get to matches. When we create that kind of access for the fans, we're also going to create more access for the families, for the players, for the youth systems, more clubs, more opportunities, more access. And in the end, American soccer is going to be better for it. If we had 72 to 80 of these clubs operating in our top table style league setup in the super conferences with a third division on paper, but would technically be our second division, that would house 16 of these kind of super regional professional leagues. You're talking about a lot of teams. You're talking about taking the English pyramid in the Premier League, the Championship, League One, and League Two, and nearly combining that alone into our super conference setup. That's not even getting into our third division of having super regional style leagues under and part of our super conferences. We've got to think about getting wide as quick as possible and allowing the entire pyramid to mature, grow commercially, become more financially viable, so that a club in West Virginia, a club in Kentucky, a club in Ohio, a club in Wyoming can develop a really good player and see that player make it and have the funding in the system for that club to get rewarded. That's solidarity payments and training compensation. We need that in American soccer. We're paying a lot of money, these families across the country, to do really expensive pay-to-play youth soccer. It's not working. We're locking families out. We're locking cities out. We're locking entire states out of access to the top levels of American youth soccer. That's silly. It's ridiculous. And we could be doing things a lot smarter than we are if we try. We put a man on the moon in less than 10 years. We certainly should be able to get a system that connects all of our clubs in the same amount of time. This system and this idea, this plan, would not put billionaires and millionaires at more financial risk. Instead, we would be giving them more opportunities to gain and earn more, to build something way beyond what they could do right now with Major League Soccer and that business plan that hasn't worked in over 20 years. Major League Soccer's not made them money. It's been their no-bid contract with U.S. Soccer through their other company, Soccer United Marketing, that has kept Major League Soccer afloat. Otherwise, it would have already failed. So we can't sit here and say that what we're doing is working. It's not. And we could do so much better if we would open our minds and look at our challenges, our obstacles, and turn those into the way forward rather into getting overwhelmed or viewing them as a deterrent to progress. If we embraced our continent-sized country and knew that together we are stronger, that we could build an American ecosystem in the sport of soccer unrivaled in the world, we could unleash the greatest sporting success in a generation. We could do it if we try. Thanks for watching the show today. Really appreciate you tuning in. As always, you can watch the show on danielworkman.com or at facebook.com/WRKMN. You can always catch me on Twitter or Instagram at Daniel Workman. As always, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.